and next week we will start our look at the book of Jonah. All right, let's prepare ourselves for the study by prayer. Father, we approach the throne of grace in appreciation for the opportunity that we have to assemble ourselves and study, observe the principles in the book of Hosea, therefore be warned in our own lives, exhorted as far as members of this nation. In Christ's name we pray, amen. All right, we have studied the outline forms of the book of Hosea, and then last week we took up the first three chapters, which really form the prologue for the understanding of the book of Hosea. The first three chapters, it's absolutely imperative that you understand the first three chapters of Hosea. Recall that in this chapters, it is the understanding of these is the application or the understanding of the entire book. Remind you tonight now, as we get into the body of the book, that the outlining of the book is really just an attempt in futility, because he goes back and forth to so many different things. He'll deal with indictment, he'll back off and go to something else, and then come back to indictments, give a little hope, and keep going back and forth in that regard. So you have to look at it from the standpoint of really just the discussion, and different things would come up between a man and a woman whose wife, the husband whose wife is they keep on betraying and comes back, and they have the discussion that will involve a lot of different things, and then the husband goes through different emotional patterns and things and thoughts and will say different things, and sometimes it's judgment, indictment, love, mercy, righteousness, and there's really no way of outlining an argument between a husband and wife. If you've ever had one, or seen it on TV, or read it in a book, or use your imagination, or whatever, I can assure you there's no outlining to an argument between a husband and wife without ever having to be a husband. I know that there's not. All right, so let's get to work. We're ready for chapters 4 through 14. And chapters 4 through 14 deal now with the judgments against Israel, the relationship between Jehovah and his nation. We're going to have judgment, we're going to have indictments, we're going to have the description of the discipline, the description of their degeneracy, we're going to have pleas of mercy, declarations of love. The word love is used in here, the word righteousness and justice is used in here. It just spans the entire gamut. It really is an intriguing book from the standpoint of just the manner in which Hosea put it together. All right, chapter 4. What we have in chapter 4, the best way of looking at this, if we, and remember, this is just an attempt in futility, give you a handle of each chapter, but you've got to understand what I've just been talking about, of how it's just going to take up one thing. So don't expect a nice little package outline where we can put everything together. By the way, one other quick point on outlining it. A lot of the commentaries that do this kind of thing, what they did, they would go, they would make a point, and it's a verses 1, 4, 10, 12, 15. Then they give another point, verse, which is a good way of doing it. But I'm not going to do that. We're just kind of going to flow through. This is the way the argument came out. This is the way the husband and wife argued. This is the way God communicated to his people. So we'll just take it in that perspective. All right, chapter 4, what we have really is the Lord's complaint against Israel. And again, recognize it as the Lord is the husband. Israel is the unfaithful wife, the northern kingdom. And so if you want to put it into righteous terms, these are indictments for its maladjustment. So it's the Lord's complaint, as a husband would complain to his wife about her activity. Or if you want to look at it, keep it in the spiritual realm, it is the indictment from the justice of God for their maladjustment. All right, verses 1 through 5, we have crimes of Israel, national maladjustment. And again, I'm going to just say, I have made no apology for reading through the chapter, because some of you probably have never read Hosea in your entire life, and reading the Word of God is all right, and we pick up the principles, but of course we're not going to be able to do this when we get back to Jeremiah, Isaiah, and the major prophets. All right, verses 1 through 5, we have crimes of Israel. Verse 1 we have, and it's very, very important that you understand verse 1, and you'll see it right off. Verse 1 is the primary indictment, and it's going to follow suit to what we studied in John chapter 5. The first indictment to Israel at the time of Christ is the first time of first indictment against Israel at the time of Hosea, and that is no doctrine. They are negative to doctrine. They are minus doctrine. The reason this is the first and most fundamental of all indictments, because it is fundamental to their activity. If they're negative to doctrine, they're minus doctrine, that's going to lead to their maladjustment and rejection of God. So that's the fundamental indictment. It forms the basis for all of the other indictments, and we studied all of those in law and principles in the Gospel of John. So there's a spiritual vacuum formed by the absence of doctrine. Something has to fill up the vacuum, and that's what we're in the midst of studying. So look at verse 1, Hosea chapter 4, verse 1. Listen, and that's the positive volition, which they're not. Listen to the word of the Lord, O sons. Just pointing out a few things as we read along. We're in Hosea chapter 4. All right, note the term endearment there, sons. They are totally maladjusted, but he still calls them sons. That's still relationship. That's still hope. Listen to the word of the Lord. That's the solution, O Israel. For the Lord has ceased. And this is what the Lord is doing now. For the Lord has a case. These are the indictments now, the complaints of the husband to the woman. The Lord has a case against the inhabitants of the land. Because there is no doctrine. It says faithfulness, but if you look in the margin, even there you have truth or doctrine. Because there is no doctrine or loyalty. There's no loyalty, no doctrine to their God. And if you'll just, you can appreciate a lot of the wording if you just remember the first three chapters, husband-wife relationship. So this is the tone that Hosea picks up. A husband wants loyalty. So there is no loyalty, like a wife to her husband, Israel to her God. So the wording tells us is very indicative of Hosea's circumstances with his wife. Because there is no doctrine, there is no loyalty, no knowledge of God in the land. So this is national degeneracy throughout the land. Now, verse 2. With the absence of doctrine, due to negative volition and no loyalty, this results in activity that is maladjustment. In other words, it goes something like this. If doctrine in your soul and in your life and in a nation makes a difference to the glorification of the Lord, then obviously the absence of doctrine is going to have its result. And so now we have that result of the absence of doctrine. All right, take a look now. Verse 2 is going to cover the absence of doctrine and the activity. So let's note, and then I'll point out some things to you. All right, verse 2. There is. Now, what we're going to deal with, what we're going to deal with, and I want to stop here for a moment, is just what I've said. No doctrine, no loyalty, that leads to activity. The whole nation is maladjusted. Now, what is the Mosaic Law? The Mosaic Law, fundamentally, the Ten Commandment part of it, fundamentally is a constitution of freedom. It is the Magna Carta of freedom. And so it establishes the way a nation should adjust. Now, you can just jot down in case you don't remember, but I'll be going through with you. All right, first of all, there is swearing. All right, now, what swearing is using the name of the Lord, and this is related to the third commandment, using the name of the Lord as a witness. In other words, God is my witness that something you say is true when in fact it is not. So that involves those first two, swearing and lying. Swearing and lying are fundamental to the spiritual aspect of the nation. All right, now it says murder. That's the sixth commandment. That's the sixth commandment, and that is the protection of freedom. Thou shalt not murder. That's the protection of freedom, the respect and protection of human life. They have no respect of God. That's what's denoted by the first two, lying and swearing. That is using the name of God in vain. That means you use God as a witness, and it isn't true. See, back in the old days, do you swear what you're going to say is truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God? Yes, I do. And then you just lie flat out, you know, right out of your teeth. And what you're doing is you're saying, God is my witness that what I say is truth. That is swearing, and that's what's violated in the Ten Commandments. Now, stealing. This is the eighth commandment. This is protection of property, the respect of private property, fundamental to a freedom of a nation. And therefore, they violate. They have no respect of property. They have no respect of life in this country. And adultery. That's the seventh commandment. They have, this is the protection of divine institution 2 and 3. Divine institution 2 and 3. They have no respect of marriage. They have no respect of family. So there's no doctrine, and therefore no respect for freedom in the nation. And this is going to result in total degeneracy and the decline of the nation. Then it says they employ violence so that bloodshed follows bloodshed. What you have here is no restraints whatsoever. See, the Ten Commandments, law if you please, the laws of divine establishment, function as a restraint on the world. The Holy Spirit functions as a restraint on believers. The laws of divine establishment function as a restraint on unbelievers as well as believers. But when there is no respect for the law, there's no restraint. So I hope you can appreciate the development of the hostility and the depthness of their degeneracy. So there's no restraint, and it intensifies. All right, verse 3 now. Verses 3 through 5, we have no alternative but of divine judgment. There's just no alternative. You leave God with no alternative. First of all, he blasts out with verse 1 and 2, and that leaves no alternative but divine judgment. And in divine judgment, by the way, is here pictured, and you can put it down. Divine judgment is pictured as a relief almost from self-destruction. Psychiatrists and psychologists say that sometimes people want to be caught when they do something. They want to be caught because it's the getting caught and being restrained is almost a relief. They're not going to stop themselves. They don't have the will to stop themselves, but they feel if they can be caught, that will stop them. So being stopped and being punished is a relief. All right, verse 3, we have the principle of what happens when there is no law. Therefore, the land mourns. So that's the concept of pollution. You've further polluted the land by all of the degeneracy. And everyone who lives in it languishes. Everyone is languishing. Everyone is miserable. Along with the beast of the field and the birds of the sky, and also the fish and the sea disappear. So the whole land, the economy of the land, the people in the land, are all under this stress of the maladjustment. In equivalent, the home, the entire home is under stress when the marriage is having problems. All right, verse 4, no one can reprove someone else. In other words, no one even cares. They're all equal in their degeneracy. Yet let no one find fault, and let none offer reproof, for your people are like those who contend with the priest. Verse 5, so you will stumble by day, and the prophet also will stumble with you by night. And I will destroy your mother. The prophets, the priests, the families are all suffering under the divine judgment. So there's the whole nation's involved in the degeneracy. The whole nation's involved in judgment. Verses 6 through 19, we have the moral indictment. The moral indictment of the self-centered life characterized by negative volition to Bible doctrine. I'll give you a little idea, and then we'll read it. Some of these are worth even underlining in your Bibles, like line in verse 6 and verse 7. and verse 10. But let's take a look at it. Verse 6. All right. Again, we start anew with the fundamental indictment, negative volition to Bible doctrine. Let's take a look. My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge. So spiritual degeneracy, no doctrine. All right? Because you have rejected knowledge. You have rejected doctrine. I will reject you from being my priest. This is spiritual degeneracy. Since you have forgotten the law of your God, there's national degeneracy. See the two? They're very closely related, and this is why the pivot is so important in the nation. So you have forgotten the spiritual realm, and then it says, since you have forgotten the law of the Lord your God, the Mosaic law, national degeneracy, I also will forget your children. All right, verse 7, God's response then, but they use it in the self-centered life and reject Christ. And no real transition from 6 to 7, because we're going to change the whole deal now. The more they multiplied, the more they sinned against me. In other words, God prospered them as a husband prospered their wife, but she just uses it all against them, all against him. I will change their glory into shame. In other words, he gave them glory. They had that from God, but they used it for sin and for maladjustment, so he's going to turn it all into shame. Very, very strong indictment. Hosea is not a pleasant book, as you'll notice we read through. All right, verse 8. Spiritual degeneracy and the self-centered life. They feed on the sin of my people and direct their desire toward their iniquity. Verse 9, note how everyone is involved. The priest, the people, everyone. And it will be like people, like priest. So I will punish them for their ways and repay them for their deeds. All right, the ways are the direction of your life. In other words, you have the Christ-centered life or the self-centered life. The deeds are the results of your way. In other words, you decide what you're going to do with your life. You might call it, and I hate to use the word because I'm using it in reference to the Bible doctrine, but you've accepted as your ideology and your way of life to advance sin, for an example. Okay, that's, you're punished for that. Not only are you punished for that, then that is going to have its actions that go with it. So you have the ways and the deeds of those ways. Verses 10 and 11, moral degeneracy. We have moral degeneracy. All right, let's take a look. Verse 10. And they will have, by the way, we have gluttonous, adultery, and drunkenness. The point here is excess to the point of maladjustment in all areas. They can't be satisfied is the idea. They just simply cannot be satisfied. And they will eat, but not have enough. They will play the harlot, but not increase. No pleasure in it. Because they have stopped giving heed to the Lord. Harlotry, wine, new wine, take away the understanding. In other words, they're drunk. And so they have gone to all of the moral degeneracy. Verses 12 to 14, spiritual degeneracy. So you can just see that as the husband and the wife, as the Lord and Israel talk here, he just hits from one thing to the next. All right, verses 12 to 14, spiritual degeneracy. Verse 12, demonism, which is always going to be a result. America's experiencing vast demonism because of our total maladjustment in the areas just given. Verse 12, my people consult their wooden idol, and their diviners, one informs them. For a spirit of harlotry has led them astray, and they have played the harlot, departing from their God. So we have spiritual adultery. Verse 13, idolatry. All right, verse 13, they offer sacrifices on top of the mountain. They burn incense in the hills under oak, poplar, and terebinth. Because their shade is pleasant, therefore your daughters play the harlot, and your brides commit adultery. You can just see the horribleness of these people, to the depth of which they have gone to. The spiritual adultery related to their spiritual life turns into physical adultery, and they relate that all to their idolatry. Idolatry in the temples and in these idolatrous places are associated with adultery, promiscuity. The temple has its priest and its female and male prostitutes, as all related to worship, and they have accepted and got involved in all of this. Verse 15, he blasts out. Let's see, do we read verse 14? I will punish your daughters when they play the harlot, or your brides when they commit adultery, for the men themselves go apart with harlots and offer sacrifices. See, it's related. It's even worse than just adultery. It is related to worship. It is related to the whole momentum. In other words, this is right. See what I'm saying? This is part of what they've accepted is right. This is their spiritual thing. And they offer sacrifices with temple prostitutes. So the people, without understanding, are ruined. So you see how the Lord has to deal with this idolatrous people. Verse 15 is a warning. All of a sudden, the Lord's thought goes to the southern kingdom, and he throws in the midst of all of this, a warning to Judah not to be influenced by Israel. We've got to move on. I want to finish Hosea tonight. So verse 15 is a warning to Judah not to be influenced by Israel and to follow in her way. Though you, Israel, play the harlot, do not let Judah become guilty. Also do not go to Gilgal or go up to Beth Haven. Beth is the word for house. Haven is nothing. This is the house of nothing. That's the house of idolatry and worship of idols. And take oath as the Lord lives. So that's the oath. That's the swearing. You swear by God. Verses 16 through 19, we have a condemning description of Israel. We have a condemning description of Israel. In other words, verse 15 is the warning against Judah, and then there's just saying, you'd say, Judah, don't follow them, and then you'd say, because, Judah, watch them. Take a look at them. Now here's verse 16. They are like dumb cows. Amos called the ladies cows. Hosea calls the nation. Since Israel is stubborn, like a stubborn heifer, can the Lord now pasture them like a lamb in a large field? Verse 17, they're going to be alone. One of the great tragedies of life in judgment. Ephraim is joined to idols. Let him alone. Their liquor gone. They play the harlot continually. Their rulers dearly love shame. So you can see the lust pattern is maximized. The wind wraps them in its wings, and they will be ashamed because of their sacrifices. National shame to the nation. All right. Chapter 5, verses 1 through 14, grace policy is withdrawn. And you can follow the husband-wife analogy and how God feels now. So verses 1 through 14, the grace is withdrawn from them. Verses 1 and 2, everyone is involved. And I'll give you the principle. Let's read it, and then I'll give you the principle. All right? Everyone is involved. Hear this, O priest, spiritual. Give heed, O house of Israel. That's the legislative branch, the princes, the lawmakers of the land. Listen, O house of the king. That's the executive branch of the government. For the judgment applies to you, for you have been a snare at Mizpah and a net spread out on Tabor. And the revolters, these are the people now. They form revolution. The revolters have gone deep in depravity, but I will chastise all of them. What's the principle? No pivot. No pivot anywhere to be found in the nation. And so when you have no pivot, judgment results. Verses 3 through 5, we have the position where you cannot recover. Now, I want to read this because this is important. You reach a point where there's simply no recovery. The husband has enough. Finally, you reach a point where you've just had enough of her. God's reached a point where he's just had enough of Israel. It'd be like a parent working with a child in a day. And so as the day goes on, the child just continues and continues and continues. And finally, the parent has worked, and we'll call it grace and mercy, and just has not taken time to spank and to discipline. And finally, you just reach a point, that's it. You have tried me. You have pushed me. You have rejected my pleas to straighten up. I've had enough. And no matter what you say now, you're going to get it. I have warned you too many times, and that's what we have. So take a look now at these very important verses. I know Ephraim. See, it starts off, the Lord knows what they're like. So when they say we want to return, you remember the Lord knows. All right, I know Ephraim, and Israel is not hidden from me. For now, O Ephraim, you have played the harlot. Israel has defiled itself. Their deeds will not allow them to return to their God. You just reach a point to where you are so hardened, you are in such a position, you cannot return. For a spirit of harlotry is within them. In other words, their whole attitude, their whole thinking. They can't even return to the Lord. They don't want to return to the Lord. They have the whole concept of harlotry. And they do not know the Lord. Again, the ultimate indictment, they do not know the Lord. Verse 5, moreover, the pride of Israel, there's your arrogance. The pride of Israel testifies against them. And Israel and Ephraim stumble in their iniquity. Judah also has stumbled with them. So Hosea will pick up Judah and sometimes in the indictment. So they are so in such a position they can't return. All right, verse 6. Very, very important verse. Jehovah withdraws. And we'll read it and then note a few things. They will go forth with their flocks and herds to seek the Lord, but they will not find him. He has withdrawn from them. All right, the very simple principle. You have left him. And therefore, he leaves you. And he is a gentleman, and you don't want him, and so he is taken off. And when it says, you seek the Lord, what they're doing is, very quickly, so that you may want, well, here it says they're seeking the Lord, why didn't he redeem them? The problem is they're seeking the Lord like they seek their lovers. The Lord is just one of their lovers, and that's, you know, backing off, and so they want him as just one of their many lovers, and they really do not care. So the Lord is not impressed with that type of activity. See, it isn't seeking the Lord, and I'll show you that later on, why we know that. But they're not seeking the Lord. They're not saying, all right, we have played the harlot, we have been in spiritual degeneracy, we have been involved in demonism, we know all of this, we're returning, we're leaving that, we're going to you. No, he's just another. Of the word lovers that they want to have. And that's where a lot of people want to have with the Lord, and it isn't going to work. Verse 7, divine discipline waits them. They have dealt treacherously, and that means to betray against the Lord, for they have borne illegitimate children. Now the new moon will devour them with their land. All right, verses 8 through 15, we have the details of coming disaster. Very quickly now, the details of coming disaster. Verse 8, the invading armies of Assyria are advancing. Now God describes to them some of the things that are going to happen. Verse 8, invading armies of Assyria are advancing, and Israel, call to arm will be futile. Blow the horn in Gibeth, the trumpet in Ramah, sound an alarm in Beth-Aven, behind you, Benjamin. All of their alarm is going to avail nothing. Verse 9, divine discipline. Ephraim will become a desolation in the day of rebuke. Among the tribes of Israel, I declare what is sure, what is certain, because of your maladjustment. Judah also will follow them. Judah is dumb. Judah does not learn. Judah is arrogant. The princes of Judah have become like those who move a boundary. You understand what that means? That's an idiom. They've just like they've moved up into the northern kingdom and just taken identity of the northern kingdom. On them I will pour out my wrath like water. It will even be worse because they had the warning. All right, divine discipline from the self-centered life, verse 11. Divine mandates are not first to them, and this is a cause of judgment. Ephraim is oppressed, crushed in judgment, because he was determined to follow man's command, not God's command, the Lord's command. This is why you have mandates first. Verse 12, therefore, I am like a moth to Ephraim and like rottenness to the house of Judah. Verse 13, no help for man. You turn to the laws of man, but watch what happens. When Ephraim saw her sickness and Judah his wound, then Ephraim went to Assyria and sent to the king Jareb, but he is unable to heal you or to cure you of your wound. So you follow man, but when you really need man, he's not there. That's the tragedy. You followed your other lovers, but when you really needed them, your lovers abandoned you. and you left the only true God of Israel. Verse 14, divine discipline is characterized like that of a lion. A lion will serve many different, two major different concepts here. The lion will be used for discipline. The lion will also be used for blessing, as I'll show you as we develop. Right now, divine discipline in terms of the lion. For I will be like a lion. This is Jehovah. I will be like a lion to Ephraim, and like a young lion, a young stallion, a young buck lion, who's very strong, very powerful, and very hungry. And like a young lion to the house of Judah. If we were studying it, I'd have to point out Judah is the lion tribe, and Judah is going to be killed by the lion concept. I will tear to pieces and go away like the lion. He will rip to pieces and then walk away. And I will carry away, and there will be none to deliver. No one is going to stop Jehovah the lion. Verse 15, her only hope is to acknowledge guilt and make recovery. This is why we know they did not legitimately turn to the Lord, because this is what they will have to do. I will go away and return to my place. Until they acknowledge their guilt, seek my face in their affliction, they will earnestly seek me. Earnestly seek me, truthfully. They do not truthfully seek him. They do not have remorse or even care about the way they've been living. As I said, when it said they return to the Lord, that's just as another lover. Like a woman may come home, the woman having an affair, come home, and she wants to make love to her husband tonight, and then tomorrow night she'll be back with her lover again. Forget that. So that's the idea here in what he's saying is, if you want to come home and forget all of that, your life in harlotry, fine. I'll take you back. But to come in and make love with me tonight and say things, I don't want that kind of love. That's what verse 15 is dealing with in reference to the entire chapter. It's a very rough book. Very rough book. Chapter 6, the principle of reconstruction, restoration, and blessing. Now what I want to do, verses 1 through 3 deal with the millennium. And it deals with the end of the tribulation and millennium, future restoration. And I'm going to show you why all of a sudden this is put here. God dealing with his people, verse 1, the millennium restoration, verse 2, and the Messiah in the millennium, verse 3. And it's not here to give hope. I'm sorry. Usually that's what the prophet does when he throws in concepts of the millennium. Here it's even really an indictment. I'll show you why. All right, let's read them first. Verse 6, chapter 6, verses 1 through 3, millennial tribulation and millennium. Come, let us return to the Lord. For he has torn us, but he will heal us. He has wounded us, but he will bandage us. He will revive us after 2 days. He will raise us up on the third day, that's completion, that we may live before him. So let us know. Let us press on to know the Lord. Positive volition in the millennium. His going forth is as certain as the dawn, and he will come to us like the rain. Like the spring rain watering the earth. All right, what's the principle of verses 1 through 3, and why in the midst of all of this does he give this? All right, here's the point. This is an indictment. The Jews in the tribulation, even the Jews in the tribulation will return to the Lord. And if they can return to the Lord, this generation should also return to the Lord. So in the future of the generation who will return to the Lord, and if they can and will, so should you. And you won't even do what your future generation will do. You will not return. Verses 4 through 11, we have more divine indictment to both the southern and northern kingdom. All right, let's take a look at the verses. Verse 4, we have very weak loyalty in verse 4. What shall I do with you, O Ephraim? Remember, just pick the words of Hosea to his wife who plays the prostitute. What shall I do with you, O Ephraim? You can hear the emotion and the tone. What shall I do with you, O Judah? For your loyalty is like a morning cloud and like the dew which goes away early. Well, as soon as the sun comes up and the heat's on the dew, it's gone. What's the idea? As soon as there's any heat or pressure or light put on their loyalty, it's gone. They do not care about the Lord one bit. So there's weak loyalty. Verse 5, we have doctrinal condemnation before spiritual punishment. And this is the fairness of God. Therefore I have cut pounded. I have smashed them in pieces by the prophets. So that's the doctrine that first of all came along and exhorted you and told you what you're doing. I have slain them by doctrine of my mouth, and the judgments on you are like the light that goes forth. In other words, the light has warned them, but they ignored. Verses 6 through 8, we have Jehovah rejects the ritual without reality. Verses 6 through 8, Jehovah rejects ritual without reality. Your words are meaningless. Your actions are meaningless. They mean nothing because they're not backed by reality. Verses 6 and 8, 6, 7, and 8. For I delight in loyalty rather than sacrifice, works, and in the knowledge of God, Bible doctrine, and the soul, rather than burnt offerings, works. But like Adam, they have transgressed the covenant. There they have dealt betrayously. That's treacherous. It means to betray me. Gilead is a city of wrongdoers, tracked with bloody footprints. And that means that they have their bloody sacrifices have meant absolutely nothing to God. Verse 9, the priesthood are total failures, and they are also degenerate. All they're doing is seeking personal gain and money. And as raiders wait for a man, so a band of priests murder on the way to Shechem. The priests, all they want is all the money they can get. Surely they have committed crime, the criminal arrogance that always follows. Verses 10 through 11, here we have divine disappointment. The priests who are supposed to at least be the ones who would proclaim his greatness, they have betrayed. As a man his wife, so God and his priest. In the house of Israel, I have seen an horrible thing. Ephraim's harlotry is there. Israel has defiled itself. Also, O Judah, there is a harvest appointed for you when I restore the fortunes of my people. All right, chapter 7. Chapter 7, we have moral degeneracy and spiritual degeneracy. All right, let's read through. It just has a few verses. Let's take a look. All right, verse 1, deceit. Deceit. By the way, having an affair, an adulterous relationship, always is going to involve deceit. There's a flow here. When I would heal Israel, heal Israel, the iniquity of Ephraim is uncovered, and the evil deeds of Samaria, for they deal falsely. The thief enters in. Bandits raid outside. So there is deceit in the land. Verse 2, they did not even consider what is happening. Goes back to our study in Haggai of consider your life. And they do not consider their hearts, that I remembered all their wickedness. Nor now their deeds are all around them. They are before my face. That is their deeds. Verses 3 through 7, everyone is guilty. No pivot, again, is the idea. Verse 3, the various branches. With their wickedness, they make the king glad, led to the executive branch, and the princes their lies, the legislative branch, in passing laws. Verse 4, they are all adulterers, like an oven heated by the baker, who ceases to stir up the fire from the kneading of the dough until it is leavened. In other words, the spiritual adultery leads to physical adultery, and they have just totally destroyed themselves. Verse 5, drunkenness. On the day of our king, the princes became sick with the heat of wine. He stretched out his hand with scoffers. This is blasphemy when you're drunk. Verses 6 and 7, sick, and they are sick and reversionist, and all of this is going to be caught, the nation's going to be caught like fire in this degeneracy. For their hearts are like an oven, and they approach their plotting. Their anger smolders at night. In the morning it burns like a flaming fire. All of them are hot like an oven. This, all this degeneracy has just taken over the land. And they consume their rulers. All their kings have fallen. None of them calls on me. In other words, they destroy, but no one considers the Lord. Verses 8 through 11, further description of their separation from Jehovah. Verse 8, they separated Jehovah, they joined themselves with evil. Ephraim mixes himself with nations. Ephraim has become a cake not turned. In other words, not turned. It's false. What you see is false. It hasn't been turned. So they have joined themselves with other lovers. Verse 9. We got two principles. Let's read it, and I'll give you the two principles. Strangers devour his strength, yet he does not know it. Gray hairs are also sprinkled on him, yet he does not know it. Two principles. First of all, their energy is drained by their idolatry, or if you want to keep it with the ideal of adultery, their energy is drained in adultery, so they have no energy for love of the Lord. And secondly, time is running out, and they do not know it. Gray hair, their time is running out very quickly. They're turning prematurely gray, and they're not aware of what's going on. They do not redeem the time, and the time is about to be taken away from them. All right, verse 10, blinded by arrogance. That's why they do not see what is happening. Through the pride of the Israel, testifies against him, yet they have neither returned to the Lord their God, nor have they sought him for all this. In other words, arrogance has totally blinded them. Verse 11, they go to others rather than the Lord. They have their lovers rather than the Lord. So Ephraim has become like a silly dove without sins. They call to Egypt. They go to Assyria. Verses 12 through 16, divine judgment and attitude, God's attitude toward Israel. Verses 12 through 13, they bring about their own destruction. When they go, I will spread my net over them. I will bring them down like the birds of the sky. I will punish them in accordance with the proclamation, the doctrine that is given. Woe to them, for they have strayed from me. Destruction is theirs, for they have rebelled against me. I would redeem them, but they speak lies against me. See, this is their rejection of Jehovah. And they do not cry to me from their soul when they wail on their beds for the sake of grain and new wine. They assemble themselves. They turn away from me. In other words, they do not go to the Lord. Although I train and strengthen their arms, yet they devise evil against me. So the Lord continues to try to bless them. They continue to reject his blessing. They turn, but not upward. That is toward me. They are like a deceitful bow. Their princes will fall by the sword. Because of the insolence of their tongue, this will be their derision in the land of Egypt. All right, chapter 8. Chapter 8 is a description of divine judgment. Verses 1 through 14, we have the judgment of the whirlwind. How long it's been since we studied the doctrine of the whirlwind, but the whirlwind is used for divine judgment against a rebellious nation. Verses 1 through 3, the enemy is coming. The enemy is coming. All right. Put the trumpet to your lips. Let an eagle. The enemy comes against the house of the Lord, because they have transgressed my covenant, rebelled against my law. They cried out to me, my God. We of Israel now know thee. Israel has rejected the good. The enemy will pursue them. So they will cry for relief, but they don't care about the Lord. It's like it's all of you parents. You whipped your children, and we've all been children. As we're being whipped, I'm sorry. I'll never do it again. Some kids, I love you. The parents beating them. Trying to do anything to get the relief of the pain. Has nothing to do, no remorse. We didn't feel sorry for what we did. We don't really love our parents or any of that kind of stuff. Just make the hurt stop on our backside. And we'll say whatever has to be said. Well, that's what they have here, but it isn't real one little bit. Verses 4 through 6, divine anger, therefore. This makes God even more angry, as it does the parent. The child doesn't even begin to understand what he's being spanked for and what he's done wrong. Verse 4, they eliminated God from their political and spiritual life. They have set up kings, but not by me. They have appointed princes, but I did not know them. With their silver and gold, they have made idols for themselves, that they might be cut off. Note, the prosperity is there. That's what they do with it. They have the silver and the gold, but that's how they use the silver and gold. Verses 5 and 6, her idolatry angers God. He has rejected your calf, O Samaria, saying, my anger burns against them. How long will they be incapable of innocence? Far from Israel is even this. A craftsman made it, so it is not God. Surely the calf of Samaria will be broken into pieces. They worship idols instead of the true God. Verses 7 through 14, his anger now leads to destruction. His anger now leads to destruction. Verse 7, the whirlwind judgment. For they sow the wind, they reap the whirlwind. The standing grain has no heads. It yields no grain. Should it yield, strangers would swallow it up. Verse 8, Israel is swallowed up. There's no uniqueness now in the nation. See, all right, let's read verse 8 and I'll point out what the main principle. Israel is swallowed up. They are among the nations like a vessel in which no one delights. Yesterday they were elect. Yesterday they had a purpose. Today they're like other nations. In fact, they're even worse than other nations. They have nothing desirable about them, so they're going to be crushed. In other words, the believer has a destiny in the plan of God, but when you and I are out of the plan of God, we are likened unto the unbeliever and involved in evil, but we're even worse because we're really not in the campaign of Satan because we're believers. So even he doesn't really want us. And so we are useless. We are really have nowhere to we belong. That's to Israel. Verse 9, lovers, for they have gone to Assyria like a wild ass all alone. Ephraim has hired lovers, chosen other people rather than the Lord. Just another quick note. Look at the word hire. You have to pay. When you deal with the Lord, you don't have to pay. When the wife deals with her husband, she doesn't have to pay. But when you go get lovers, you have to pay. Verse 10, but they did not escape divine judgment. Even though they went to their lovers could not save them. Even though they hired allies among the nations, which cost them, by the way, there goes their gold and silver. Now I will gather them up, and they will begin to diminish because of the burden of the king of princes. I wish we had time. If you're thinking, think of what's happening to our gold and our silver and our wealth in this country. It's going out of this country. I mean, you cannot escape what has happened through all of history and what is happening in America. And we don't see it because when we put out our money to pay the deficits and trade and all the rest of it, we don't understand in the sense of prophecy and in the Word of God, but that's what's happening. Our gold is going out. We're paying other nations, and we have picked it up. Rather than it coming in, it's going out. And that's the picture, and that's a warning to us economically, but we're not heeding it. And there's just no way this kind of activity can continue. All right. Verse 11, we have their maladjustments, and Ephraim has multiplied altars for sin. This is idolatry. They have become altars of sinning for him. Though I wrote, verse 10, they had received the law, but they rejected it. Though I wrote for them 10,000 precepts of my law, they are regarded as a strange thing. They rejected the law of God. The law of God was given to this nation, but they rejected. Verse 13, there's going to be, until maladjustment is taken care of, there's going to be divine judgment. Let me show you two things that happened to judgment. All right, verse 13. As for my sacrificial gifts, they sacrifice the flesh and eat it, but the Lord has taken no delight in them. Now he will remember their iniquity, punish them for their sins. They will return. They will return to Egypt. On the cross, sins are taken care of. But you must remember, in the sense of the family, or in this case, the elect nation, in our own lives, there's either what has to take place in our own lives. So you'll understand what we have here. I will remember their iniquity. One of two things happens in our own personal life: either we rebound, or we're going to be disciplined. Sometimes discipline follows, but it's for a blessing. But we have to take care of our maladjustments. So we have either a choice. We can either rebound or we can receive the judgment that is meritorious of it and ending up in the sin unto death, which is the fifth cycle of discipline applied to the nation. All right, I hope I didn't confuse you more than help you by that quick explanation. All right, verse 14. For Israel has forgotten her Maker. That's the being the election of God.
and built palaces, and Judah has multiplied fortified cities, but I will send a fire on its cities that it may consume its palatial dwellings. Now, here's the idea. They tried all of these things rather than God, and they haven't worked. Chapter 9 is a decline of the nation. Chapter 9 is a description of the decline of the nation. We have judgment is described throughout the entire chapter. Let's just read, let me give you a quick idea of these, and then we'll move on. Verses 1 through 3, divine judgment. There's no happiness with idolatry. Verses 1 through 3, no happiness with idolatry. We're about ready to finish up Hosea. We're in chapter 9. All right, verses 1 through 3, no happiness with idolatry. Verses 4 through 6, Jehovah will end their ritual. Jehovah will bring an end to all of their worship. In other words, when they're taken out in the fifth cycle of discipline, no more will they worship. He will end it. He's not satisfied with it, so he'll just end it. Verses 7 and 9, divine judgment due to the rejection of Bible doctrine. Look at those verses. Verse 7, the days of punishment have come. The days of retribution have come. Let Israel know this. The prophet is a fool. The inspired man is demented because of the grossness of your iniquity and because your hostility is so great. Now, don't go around saying that I'm demented. You have to understand what this verse is talking about in its proper place before you start quoting that verse. All right, verses 10 through 14, all glory is gone. We studied this in a special a couple of years ago in July. All glory is faded. So here is faded glory of the nation. It is gone. I found Israel, and you can see the compassion as a husband to the wife, like Hosea to his wife, and God to the nation. I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I saw your forefathers as early as fruit on the fig tree in its first season. But they came to Baal Peor and devoted themselves to shame. They became a detestable as that which they loved. In other words, the Lord, as Hosea finds a woman, she goes into prostitution. The Lord found Israel, saw something very wonderful, and yet it rejects the Lord. As for Ephraim, their glory will fly away like a bird. God gave them glory, they rejected it. No birth, no pregnancy, no conception. Though they bring up their children, yet I will bereave them until not a man is left. Yes, woe to them indeed when I depart from them. It's very severe, the divine judgment. Verse 14, give them, O Lord, what wilt thou give? Give them a miscarrying womb and dry breast. Very strong indictments. Verses 15 through 17, Jehovah's love is turned to resentment due to his own integrity and holiness. I looked at verse 15. All their evil is at Gilgal, been indeed I came to hate them there. In other words, I love them, but I hate them there in their iniquity. Because of the wickedness of their deeds, I will drive them out of my house. The husband concept, that was Hosea and his wife. I will love them no more. And their princes are rebels. Because of his own integrity, he can no longer put up with their life. Chapter 10 is a destructive chapter, describing their destruction. Verses 1 through 11, we have how they have turned blessing into evil. Chapter 10, we have how they have turned blessing into evil. Note verse 5 just for a moment. The inhabitants of Samaria will fear for the calf of Bethaven, the house of nothing. Indeed, its people will mourn over it, and its idolatrous priest will cry out over it, over its glory, since it has departed from it. That is, the glory has departed from them. They have taken everything and turned it away. Verse 1 of chapter 10. Israel is a luxuriant vine. He produces fruit for himself. The more his fruit, the more altars he made. The richer his land, the better he made the sacred pillars. In other words, if God blessed them, they use it for idolatry. They use it against him. Verses 12 through 15 is a call to recovery. Verses 12 through 15 is a call to recovery, to return to the Lord. And in other words, allow divine discipline to cause you to return. Look at this call. Verse 12. soul with a view to righteousness. In other words, you're going to be disciplined to bring you back to righteousness. Reap in accordance with kindness or mercy. Break up your fallow ground, for it is time to seek the Lord until He comes to rain righteousness over you. You have plowed wickedness. You have reaped injustice. You have eaten the fruit of lies because you have trusted in your way, self-centered life, in your numerous warriors. Therefore, a turmoil will arise among your people, revolution. All your fortresses will be destroyed, as Shalman destroyed Beth. This are all related to history. Beth Arbel on the day of battle, when mothers are dashed to pieces with their children. Thus it will be done to you at Bethel because of your great wickedness, your evil. All right, let's note chapter 11 very quickly. Chapter 11, description of the fall and decline of the empire. Chapter 11 is a description of the fall and decline of the empire. Verses 1 through 4, election and love and rejection. All right, let's this is a wonderful chapter, so we have time. Let's take a look at verses 1 through 4. When Israel was a youth, I loved him. You can see the compassion all of a sudden being turned. And out of Egypt, I called my son. The more they called them, the more they went from them. They kept sacrificing to Baals and burning incense to idols. Yet it is I who taught Ephraim to walk. This is the father-son. You can take it from the husband-wife, the feelings and the emotion that Hosea has in regard to his betraying wife. Yet it is I who taught Ephraim to walk. I took them in my arms, but they did not know that I healed them. I led them with cords of a man, with bonds of love, and I became to them as one who lifts the yoke from their jaws. And I bent down, and I fed them. They will not return to the land of Egypt, but Assyria. By the way, verses 5 through 7, Assyria will be the tool of destruction. Verses 8 through 9 is the plea of God's love as a man loves a woman. You can just hear the tone of the man who has told, he's told Gomer, Hosea's told Gomer to leave, God has told Israel to leave, but one more try. You can just hear the plea. How can I give you up, O Ephraim? You can feel the compassion of God. How can I surrender you, O Israel? How can I make you like Admah or Zebanim? These are cities destroyed with Sodom and Gomorrah. My heart is turned over within me. All my compassions are kindled. I will not execute my fierce anger. I will not destroy Ephraim forever. For I am God and not man, the Holy One in your midst. And I will not come in wrath. They will walk after the Lord. He will roar like a lion. By the way, this is millennium. Indeed, he will roar, and his sons will come trembling from the west, regathering of Israel. They will come trembling like birds from Egypt, like doves from the land of Assyria, from all over the world. They will return at the Feast of the Tabernacle, or the sound of the Feast of the Trumpets. All right? Chapter 12. The evil and the maladjustment of the nation. Evil and maladjustment of the nation. Very interesting in chapter 12 is verse 1. We'll call this the diet of the wind. The diet of the wind. Feeding on lies and empty hopes. Ephraim feeds on wind and pursues the east wind continually. Multiplies lies and violence. Moreover, he makes a covenant with Assyria, and oil is carried to Egypt, the loss of prosperity. Verses 2 through 14, Jacob should have learned as a warning, but it didn't. See, they should have learned from Jacob. He was a usurper and a liar. Chapter 13, judgment for idolatry. Chapter 13, judgment for idolatry. Verses 1 and 2, idolatry described. Verses 3 through 6, the final indictment, they have forgotten the Lord. The wife, the lover, has forgotten her wife. Look at verse 6. And as they had their pasture, they became satisfied. And being satisfied, their heart became arrogant. Therefore, they forgot me. They were so satisfied with their lovers, they forgot God. Therefore, 7 and 8, judgment is going to come. You have forgotten me, I will bring judgment. verses 9 through 16, judgment is intermingled with mercy. Judgment is intermingled with mercy. And then chapter 14, the final plea. The final plea, verses 1 through 4, the condition of blessing. Verse 4, divine love. Verses 5 through 8, future blessings. Verse 9, a challenge to the wise. Let's close with the reading of chapter 14. Return, O Israel, to the Lord your God, for you have stumbled because of your iniquity. Take doctrine with you. Return to the Lord. Say to him, take away all iniquity, and receive us graciously, that we may present the fruit of our lips. Assyria will not save us. We will not ride on horses, nor will we say again, our God, to the work of our hands, worship and idolatry. For in thee the orphan finds mercy. I will heal their apostasy. I will love them freely, for my anger has turned away from them. I will be like the dew to Israel. He will blossom like a lily, and he will take root like the cedars of Lebanon. His shoots will sprout. His beauty will be like the olive tree, his fragrance like the cedars of Lebanon. Those who live in his shadow will again raise grain, and they will blossom like the vine. His renown will be like the wine of Lebanon. O Ephraim, what more have I to do with idols? Is it I who answered and looked after you? I am like a luxuriant cypress. From me comes your fruit. And verse 9 is the warning to the wise. Whoever is wise, not very many, but whoever is wise, let him understand these things. Whoever is discerning, let him know them. For the ways of the Lord are right, and the righteous will walk in them, but transgressors will stumble in them. God add his blessing to the reading of his holy word. All right, let's get ready for our collection.